Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good to be with all of you on a Tuesday morning of a game week. We are in the middle of 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage, taking you up to the Texans and Chiefs on Thursday night. It's the world's biggest pregame show is what we're doing here all throughout the day, into the evening, overnight. We've got you covered here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, Ian Rappaport tweets last night, sources, the Arizona Cardinals and star receiver DeAndre Hopkins are closing in on an agreement on a contract extension to properly compensate.
Properly compensate their
star. Hopkins did the deal himself. He went on to retweet himself, Rappaport did, and say when Arizona traded for Hopkins, they did so knowing he'd want a new contract. Now one is coming and richly deserved. I guess, look.
Wait a second. Rappaport said and richly deserved?
Yes.
What is he doing there? Like, is he not supposed to be just reporting the news?
Injecting his opinion, Seth. I don't know if you've noticed, but hot takery gets you a lot of money these days on television.
Yeah, I guess so. No, but it's just strange. I guess I know the lines have been blurred, but it just feels like I wish these guys. It's just sometimes so obvious that, like, whether the player or the agent is feeding some of the information, because they have to add in that little, like, do you not have some level of integrity where you say, like, yeah, I'm going to report it, thank you, but I'm not going to sit there and editorialize on the news that you just gave me. You're not even really doing me a favor if you're telling me what my opinion's going to be about it.
Well, in this case, that would mean that Rappaport was talking to DeAndre Hopkins' agent,
right?
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, yeah. Or his representation, DeAndre Hopkins.
DeAndre Hopkins, yeah, or his marketing agent, DeAndre Hopkins, yeah.
Yeah.
So the weird thing about that, as long as you bring that up, is that Rappaport is thought to be a guy who's in the O'Brien inner circle. I don't know if that's true or not, but he's thought to be one of those guys.
I don't think I've ever thought Rappaport was. I thought Albert Breer was
Breer
the guy.
For sure. You know,
Rappaport seems to have a lot of Texans information, yeah. But maybe it's because it was coming more from various agents that he's hooked up
with. Yeah, I don't know that it's true. I just think people think that Rappaport is on that. Some people do. I think is on that list, and I don't think that he is. So
I think Breer is. I'm going to keep monitoring Breer.
Yeah, keep eyes on Breer. So DeAndre Hopkins, Seth, I think it's safe to say, is going to get a contract at a minimum in the neighborhood of Julio Jones's $22 million a year. For those who don't know the numbers, DeAndre Hopkins was scheduled to make $12.5 million, $13.5 million a year here over the next 3 years. He wanted more money. Bill O'Brien didn't want to give him more money, in part because Bill O'Brien knew there were going to be guys that played other positions that Bill O'Brien prioritizes more than receiver. He didn't want to pay a receiver top of market money. And I don't know that Bill O'Brien is ever going to pay receivers top of market money, if you want to know the truth. If he's not going to pay Hopkins, he's probably not going to pay any of these other guys top of market money. Seth, I guess the question becomes, if DeAndre Hopkins winds up getting $22, $23 million a year, and that was going to be the price of poker to keep him, was it the right move to move on from DeAndre Hopkins?
We don't know everything that goes on in terms of what was the disconnect between Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins. Whose fault was that? Like, that's the soap opera that you'll never get a straight answer on. Maybe there is no right answer because it's interpersonal relationships are always going to be hazy.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to the actual dollars and cents, all of that comes down to, all right, is Bill O'Brien going to be able to get the layers and layers of players with all that money that he would have been paying to DeAndre Hopkins? Can he do that instead with other players and have a better, more well-rounded offense? That's the question. I mean, so far, I think you could reasonably argue that for this current year, I mean, you could have signed Randall Cobb and had DeAndre Hopkins. You could have You didn't, you know, you could have probably found another running back, perhaps, like David Johnson. At the very least, it doesn't have $12 million guaranteed coming to him.
You're saying if Hopkins played under his current deal, not with a new deal, obviously.
Well, no, with a new deal, if he'd gotten a new deal.
Okay.
If Hopkins had gotten a new deal, it's still the cap figure. The cap figures are not going to be so debilitating to the cap that you can't feel the team. And that's where we'll see. Let's see. We can play this little experiment after Hopkins' contract comes out. Let's figure which players he wouldn't have been able to do without. You're paying David Johnson. This is the hardest part, is saying that you had to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins because he wanted too much money, but then simultaneously paying David Johnson $10 million, $12 million guaranteed over the next 2 years. That's the part that I have a hard time stomaching.
Yeah.
Now, the Brandon Cooks contract is a good deal, because the Rams were not appropriately raked over the coals for that debacle the way they should be. The Rams ate all of that guaranteed money just because they wanted to get that contract off the books. So the Texans have Brandon Cooks at a respectable cap figure, but with no guaranteed money whatsoever. So it gives them a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm gonna look at this a very rudimentary way. It's a little more complex than this when you take into account signing bonuses and spreading the cap hit out and so forth. But just to, I guess just to try to encapsulate Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby's mindset on this thing, if DeAndre Hopkins gets a top-of-market contract, he's going to be making about $22 or $23 million a year. They are paying, in 2020, they are paying Randall Cobb, Brandon Cooks, and Kenny Stills combined about $23 or $24 million a year, which plays into the layers and layers of players that you're talking about.
Yep.
Are you not only swapping out Hopkins for some depth at wide receiver, but for a different type of wide receiving core as well, with speed and a better ability to stretch the field?
Right. And, yeah, I understand the concept, but I would point out that Hopkins' cap figure likely wouldn't have been $23 million.
That's why I said it's very. Yeah. This is why I said it's a rudimentary way of looking at it. It's more complex than that.
And also, I think the other thing, too, is that, all right, look, Hopkins couldn't hold. Maybe he would have faked an injury or something. Theoretically, like, a player could do that, but it's really, really hard to hold out these days. And if they wanted it to get ugly, then it could have gotten ugly. But the Texans had all the leverage. So if Hopkins had gotten a new contract, it wouldn't have had to have been the best wide receiver contract in the league.
Yeah.
You know, Julio Jones wanted a new contract for a long time, and they were able to kind of work their way through it until he got that new contract. The only thing I worry is that the Texans have kind of set this precedent that as soon as there's any echo of discontent whatsoever, okay, you get your way, you're gone. I know you got 3 years left on your deal, DeAndre, but boy, we sure do like there to be no controversy around here. So we'll just show you we'll let you have your way.
And I guess, Seth, the question with that becomes: is that something that there really is a true beneficial effect for an entire locker room, or is that something where Bill O'Brien is doing something for the benefit of Bill O'Brien? You know what I mean? Does Bill O'Brien not like having that sort of discord because it's one more thing for him to have to manage or worry about? Or is there truly maybe some sort of, you know, sort of low-key, thinly veiled envy or jealousy in the locker room if a guy's making a stink about not having the biggest contract at his position and not practicing because of it?
Right. And I don't think it would be – I don't think you'd worry about the envy or what have you. I think you worry just about that – one of your best players isn't fully on board with the head coach.
Right.
So you can't appropriately brainwash everybody if one of your key players is having an issue with the head coach. And I guess that's where it's Bill O'Brien, the general manager, sure did make the locker room management part of Bill O'Brien, the head coach's job, a lot easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, is it taking the path of least resistance? I think it is. I mean, and it's, Bill O'Brien knows that team way better than anybody on the outside, and Bill O'Brien obviously knows DeAndre Hopkins and whatever their relationship was better than anybody that we know. But it is it's the path of least resistance. Yeah. It really is. It's now between Dwayne Brown and DeAndre Hopkins. Hey, man, if you want a better contract or if you want to get the hell off the Texans, just go ahead and raise a minor stink. Or really, in DeAndre Hopkins' deal, DeAndre Hopkins rose raised no stink at all, and that was enough to get him jetted out the door. I don't know who the next guy to be, you know, to do that might be. It's got to be a really good player to have the leverage to do it, but it might happen again.
I do wonder if Bill O'Brien would have caved for Dwayne Brown if he were in control of that at the time. You know what I mean? Just given the importance of that position, and we know how much O'Brien values left tackle over wide receiver. Yeah. You know, would he have acquiesced?
Well, part of it, too, is that it is a pain in the ass. When you're on a really good team, especially, which I wouldn't classify the Texans as having been a really good team over these last few years, but once a few guys get deals before there's more than a year left on there, everybody starts clamoring
right,
for it. Then
right,
it, does, it becomes a pain in the ass.
Precedent,
yeah,
the precedent's tough.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to hear what Andre Johnson has to say tonight about whether or not this Texans offense is better without DeAndre Hopkins. We know the two were close. Andre Johnson, exclusive on the Players Show tonight at 6 p.m. That'll be very, very interesting to hear what he thinks of this offense as it's now currently constructed with this newly tuned wide receiving core. A reminder also, a Whitney Merciless autographed helmet giveaway is going to be happening on the station today. You have to be listening at 7:45 today to get the code word. You got to have the code word to win the helmet. So it starts with 7:45 a.m. during headlines today. Be listening, Seth, and I'll get you squared away. All right, you're listening to the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of coverage leading up to the Texans and the Chiefs here on Sports Radio 610. How does Deshaun Watson's new contract affect Bill O'Brien's penchant for gutting future drafts by trading picks away? He answered that question yesterday, Bill O'Brien did. We'll hear from him next. 60 hours to kickoff, baby. 60 hours on the nose. 7:20 p.m. Thursday night. That's when the Texans and Chiefs are kicking off, and we've got you covered, the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans-Chiefs coverage, 60 of the 100 still to go on Thursday night. Going to be a great night. Going to be a great night, not just for people in Houston and Kansas City, but I think all over that are football fans, that we will have arrived at an NFL season where there was a lot of question whether or not we'd even get a season this year. We are for sure going to get a week one, and looking very much forward to that.
Well, and, you know, in terms of people looking forward to this game, I think back to the first Monday night game of the season last year where Deshaun Watson and Drew Brees put on a nice show for the people, right? Did they not? So
yeah.
I think that's, look, this is a quarterbacks league. And no matter what anybody thinks about the Texans or anything else, it's just two stud quarterbacks going at it. And, I'm really, really looking forward to it. I really like the point that one of our listeners made about Deshaun coming back from a disappointment and, you know, and rebounding in the way he does. And he's done it with the Patriots. He's done it at various other times, the first round of the playoffs. That would be really nice to see him rebound from that last Kansas City Chiefs game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Yeah, Mahomes and Mahomes versus Watson. And Bill O'Brien was actually asked about the Mahomes versus Watson dynamic yesterday.
I just think it's an exciting time in this league. These two guys are just, great players, very, very dynamic players. I think that, it's always interesting how the schedules are made that, that this is the game that opens up the season, especially with what's gone on, like Vanessa just asked earlier, just what's gone on the last 6 months. I mean, it's unprecedented. And now you have this game with these two quarterbacks who have done so much early on in their careers. It's a great night for the league, and it's a great night for football.
Still feels weird, Seth, to root for a team that has a quarterback that they use as one of the billboard guys in the league. You know what I mean? Like, it's been such a long road to get to this guy. Like, when they're showing promos, it's weird because when they're showing promos for anything NFL, Deshaun is one of the first four or five faces that pops up there. It's Mahomes, it's Lamar Jackson, it's Deshaun Watson, and maybe one or two other guys. Those are the three quarterbacks, maybe Brady and guys like that. But in terms of the young guys that they market, Deshaun is one of the marketable guys, and yet the Texans are forecast to win 7.5 games this year. Something's got to give. You can't have a quarterback that's promo-worthy for the league and be under 500.
Well, you're right, and I think that's where there's so much pressure on Bill O'Brien, right? I mean, because I think the feeling that a lot of people have is that the Texans and the reason that they've had successful seasons the last few years is as much that that Deshaun Watson has raised a 8-8 football team up above to a 10 or 11 win football team more than it is that Bill O'Brien has done it for Deshaun Watson. And so there's still despite the fact that Deshaun Watson has his contract, I don't think Bill O'Brien's going anywhere anytime soon. This is the year where you hope, okay, those two come together and make a huge splash, because very rarely do the genuinely good quarterbacks go less than 500 in a season.
Right.
It's just as simple as that. You know, using QB wins to compare various quarterbacks is kind of dumb. Like, that's not fair to the quarterbacks themselves. But very good quarterbacks rarely have a losing season. Two things can't be true. They can't be a 7-9 football team, but also have Deshaun Watson be a really good quarterback.
Right.
And I think Deshaun Watson's a really good quarterback. I don't think they're going to go 7-9.
All right, so Bill O'Brien was asked yesterday about, now that the Watson contract is in place, do you need to look at your draft picks differently? Do you need to actually use these draft picks as opposed to trading them for veteran players? Here's what he had to say.
We will always look at each situation, unto itself, but also take into account that, you know, draft capital and the draft is obviously a very important part of the team building process. So we'll look at both. I mean, I wouldn't be able to sit here and tell you, like, because of these combination of contracts, you know, we're just going to go with the draft now, or vice versa. I would say that that's a constant conversation between Jack and myself and Kevin and Matt Bazergan about, you know, where we're headed next. But, obviously the draft's important to a team building process, and we understand that.
That's the right answer, Seth, because I love – when people are like, do you need to trade so-and-so, or do you want to trade so-and-so? And the answer should always be, well, what are you trading me? You know, I think sometimes people look for yes or no answers on certain things. It all depends. When you're the general manager, you got to look at the specifics of any sort of deal. I will say this, that the math is going to catch up to Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby here. They are going to, I think, need to value draft picks more as draft picks than capital to go trade for veteran guys now going forward, because they're just going to need more capable, cheap labor on this roster once Deshaun Watson and Laremy Tunsil's contracts are going to be the two biggest ones on this team, pending what happens with J.J. Watt down the road. But those two are going to be the biggest contracts, but they're not the biggest contracts until like a year or two from now. Like 2020, when 2022 rolls around, the Texans can't be trading their first and second round picks to places. You know what I mean?
Right. For next year, they don't have a first or second round pick to trade to anybody. I guess that was the first thought. When he got that question yesterday, that was my first thought was, okay, but even if you do value draft picks differently, like exactly which draft picks are you going to use, or how are you going to get those draft picks? Because they've hemmed up the guys that they really like. There aren't too many guys I could think of right now that you would want to trade away for draft picks, or they could get – really respect, unless you're going to roll all of those up and package them to trade up into the second round and what have you. There is that possibility. But, yeah, I think they have to think about things fluidly. And in any given year, it just depends who's available on the free agency market. What is a draft class like at your positions of need? And you kind of move forward like that. I think O'Brien and Easterby have a very fluid idea of player value, of draft pick value, of all that stuff, which is great in theory. They just got to pull it off. Like, yeah. And I can't say this enough times. I'm a fan of what a lot of what Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby are doing in theory, but it's the same way I'm like in favor of, I don't know, I'm in favor of running really fast, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
So I'm in favor of lots of things that I can't pull off. They have to show me that they can pull off this vision before I can be wholeheartedly saying, like, hey, yeah, you guys are the ones for this.
Well, you have to do it with some degree of expense monitoring in mind. Like, am I in favor of a locker room that's harmonious, full of hardworking guys that also happen to be very, very talented? Of course I am. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah.
But I'm also in favor of not paying guys that are in your own locker room two or three million more a year than you're supposed to, or gutting your drafts to go get guys when you don't necessarily need to gut your draft. I'm in favor of getting more than a second round pick for DeAndre Hopkins.
It's like, yeah, every woman wants a guy who's a super nice stand up guy, great with kids, but I also want him to be a bad boy. You know, he's also got to have a little bit of rebelliousness to him. He can't be tamed. Like, all right, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to find the perfect blend of all that stuff. Yeah. And can he be really good looking too? I'd like for him to be really good looking,
and
but
rich.
Not have the ego of a really good looking guy.
Yeah.
Don't have a I'd also like him to be super rich, but don't work too much. All that stuff. Now that I'm not being misogynistic.
That's the classic one.
Men are the same way with women. Men are the same way. You know, like I want a woman who's just an incredibly good looking, but also doesn't have an attitude.
Right.
And also, yeah, makes her own money, but has time to pamper me and all that stuff. We all want everything to be perfect all the time. Can you actually pull it off? Only George Clooney can.
He's the only one. It's incredible. Yeah, he's the only one. Whitney Merciless helmet, an autographed helmet from Whitney Merciless. We're giving it away later on today on the station, but you need to listen at 7:45 during headlines to qualify to qualify to win. You need a code word. You got to get a code word. You're not going to be able to win that thing without the code word. So be on the lookout for that. We've talked about Deshaun Watson and his win over the Bills last year. Texans radio special presentation tonight, 9 o'clock. The Texans playoff win over the Bills is going to be played here on the station, commercial free. So if you need a little background going on, or you're just hanging out, having a drink on the patio, you want to relive one of the more magical Deshaun Watson performances, tonight, 9 o'clock is your chance to do that. Download the radio.com app and use that radio.com rewind feature if you're just jumping in with us now. That will that'll allow you to start the show at the very beginning if you'd like. An agent's perspective and a front office perspective on locking up a franchise quarterback. Andrew Brandt of MMQB, he's done both. He's been an agent and in the Packers front office. He joins us next. I am Sean Pendergast. He is original Houston Texan Seth Payne, and we are in the middle of the world's biggest pregame show. We are in the midst of 100 hours leading up to the open to the 2020 regular season, the Texans and the Chiefs, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I have the pregame for you starting at 4:20, kickoff at 7:20, and then Clint Sterner and I on the postgame for you on Thursday night. Cannot wait for the season to get here. The Deshaun Watson contract, still the big news from over the weekend. And joining us right now is someone who can give us the perspective of not only an agent, but also a front office perspective. He was an executive for the Green Bay Packers, in addition to being a player agent, and of course, writes now for MMQB. He's got the Business of Sports podcast as well. Andrew Brandt joining us right now on Sports Radio 610. Andrew, good morning. Appreciate you making time. How are you today?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I mean, here we are. I wondered all off season if we'd get here. And, you know, we're playing through a pandemic, so you can never sort of feel like we're good until January or February. But we're starting, and kudos to the commissioner, to the efforts of the NFL to make this happen, because I really thought, like, are we really going to do this? And we're doing it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think the numbers have been incredible for the league, the testing and the league extending the daily testing. Yeah, we're gonna get there on Thursday night. We're gonna get Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And Andrew, I wanted to get your perspective. I wanted to get your perspective from having been in the front office for the Packers. What's it like on a day like Saturday for the Texans, where a team that's really never had a franchise quarterback like this locks that guy up for the next 4 years? What's the mood like across the building on a day like that?
Well, first of all, league-wide, you know, there are two flashpoints on the calendar for a lot of player contract activity. One is February, March, where you are on the cusp of free agency, trying to keep your own guys from entering the market and seeing what's behind door number two. The other is now. You know, right before the season was always my busiest time in player contracts for our own guys, because, you know, one thing is the season starts, everyone's focus is on the games, you turn it over to the coaches, it's that kind of activity. But, and you know, and some teams are pretty, and players get pretty weird about it. I'm not going to negotiate during the season. I was never like that, but I get it. And, you know, you had an easy decision here. You want to lock up your franchise quarterback, and there have already been a couple that have already done it. You've got sort of a marketplace out there. So you do it, and it's got to be a great feeling. And everything I see from that player is positive, and that's what's so great about a franchise quarterback. I experienced it with Brett and Aaron in Green Bay. You know, you have your guy, you prop up your guy as the face of the franchise, you feel good about it, and that's a golden feeling for front offices.
We're speaking with Andrew Brandt. You can listen to his Business of Sports podcast, which is very, very good. You might be skeptical and think, I don't care about the business of sports. It's much more than that. It's very, very good. Also, you show up with Ross Tucker, our good friend Ross Tucker, every week on Wednesdays on Ross Tucker's podcast. Okay, I feel like we've got a little bit of symmetry here now on the DeAndre Hopkins trade because he's getting close to a deal in Arizona. At least we can tie a bow on all the offseason drama. When that deal first went down, it was pretty much universal condemnation, except for a few anonymous GMs and a few anonymous league executives who said, okay, I could see what he's trying to do here. When it comes to that, the minority voices of people that said, all right, I kind of see what Bill O'Brien is doing. Did you hear any arguments that genuinely made sense or that made you maybe think twice about it?
Well, I just think, you know, we're in an age in sports and trades and moves where I think you have to be the way you're talking about. You have to sort of sit back, get beyond the initial social media condemnation. The word I use is Twitticule. and that tends to happen, you know, and I was that way with O'Brien a year ago when he gave up Clowney for what he got back but also had to pay part of the salary. But, yeah, I mean, I think you look back to this year's trade, and, yeah, there were some positives on the Texans' end. And, you know, for right or wrong, receivers are just not at the level of sometimes you hear about, and sometimes people overpay for receivers in free agency, in contracts, and in trade. And I think the statistics show they don't have that effect. You know, we're kind of seeing it with Beckham in Cleveland, you know, where you give up everything for receivers and it rarely works out in those situations.
Andrew Brandt joining us on the show. Andrew, one of the things that's come out is that DeAndre Hopkins is representing himself. We saw here in Houston with Laremy Tunsil getting his deal. He represented himself in the deal.
Yeah.
I'm curious your perspective on that, having been an agent as well. Is it easier for guys who maybe we kind of know what the market is because they're top of market? We see NBA players who we know are going to be max players where there's really no negotiating going on necessarily, have just hired lawyers to read their contract instead of agents to negotiate them. Can you take us through that dynamic and what your thoughts are on guys like Hopkins and Tunsil representing themselves?
Yeah, and I don't want to upset my brethren in the agent community because I think there are values there. And certainly coming out of college, their values in terms of paying for training and going through all your playbook as a young player off the field. But I get it with veterans who want to do it themselves, who want to save the agent fee. And I think I would be critical of that if there's no one in the background, you know, and I don't know that for Tunsil or Hopkins. But my sense is there is someone in the background, probably an attorney that's looking over the deal, but also someone giving them advice, even beyond the union. And I'm sure the union gets involved. And frankly, I've been involved in a couple of those, not these players, where people have sought my opinion. I had one player that was really like actually getting ready to go in the room with the team negotiator. And I gave him some thoughts. And, you know, if that's what players want to do, that's fine. You know, I want to look at it from the other side because one thing I learned in my career doing contracts for the Packers, you never want too good a deal. It came back to bite me a few times where I really got over on a player and who wasn't represented. And that was not a good thing. That was not a good thing. So I just worry about some of these deals where even if there's an agent, you know, if the players don't get a good deal and they're good players, it's going to come back to haunt teams. I learned that the hard way.
Well, that's what I've, you know, and I've heard you say this multiple times, and I agree with you on this. Sometimes the long-term deals, the super long-term deals, you're just begging for trouble because the guy, if it works out, is going to be severely underpaid 4 years into that deal, and then you got a renegotiation on your hands. So I guess what does that say for the Patrick Mahomes deal, which is 12 years from now before he's officially a free agent? Do they go into that kind of knowing and understanding, yeah, but you know what, probably after 5 years or so, we're going to have to redo this deal?
Yeah, you talked about different kind of takes on the news. And listen, I am a fan of Lee Steinberg. He has been a mentor to me when way 25 years ago, 30 years ago even. But I've been very critical of the Patrick Mahomes deal and even compared to the deal just done there by Watson. It's too long. And I understand everybody's going to react to the shiny object, which is $500 million, which he's got to make every incentive to get, of course. But I get it. They wanted to set that mark. They wanted that incredible number. 12 years. Oh, my God. And the early money is really deficient where, you know, he's making like a $10 million bonus this year. That's what kind of an average free agent makes. And he's making 63 over three. I think Watson is 75 over three. You know, Tannehill is 91 over three. You know, it's just these kind of markers you look at and say, well, how is he doing that? And then, of course, you can say, well, and after 5-6 years, he's up to like $45 million a year. And I'm like, who knows what the market's going to be in 6 years? But for the first 3 years, he's making 20 a year, which there's probably 15 quarterbacks making more than that. So I don't get the Mahomes deal, and I worry just what we talked about. I worry about the Chiefs. Like, in 1, 2, 3, 4 years, like, he's going to look around and see all these guys pass him, and like, what? Why should I have to wait till 2027 to get the huge money?
Really good insight. Andrew Brandt, MMQB, and the Business of Sports podcast joining us. Before we let you go, Andrew, got to get your take on the Jadeveon Clowney situation. That, of course, in addition to Hopkins, the other player that was shipped out by Bill O'Brien over the last year or so, outsider looking in, it looks like Clowney and maybe his representation, Bus Cook, who he's now let go twice, that somebody misread the market on Clowney. Are you getting the same sense, or did the coronavirus contribute to it at all? What are your thoughts on Clowney?
Yeah, he seems to be a guy that waits. And again, who knows what happened with Bus? I know Bus as well as anyone because of my 12 years with Brett Favre and him. I just think as a nerd like me, I was really interested to see this backstory. I'm sure you guys talked about it, where the Saints, who have cap issues, were going to have him sign with the Browns or another team. Browns pay him a few million bucks, and then the Browns get an asset, like a third-round pick from the Saints, to acquire Clowney. I thought that was, you know, as someone like me that studies this stuff, I'm like, that's great.
Yes.
And that's like a Brock Osweiler trade. I was giddy over that Osweiler trade where Cleveland took on the money plus a pick, but the league didn't allow it. And it's sad the league doesn't allow those things. It allowed for more creativity. They allowed it with Osweiler because I guess he was already an existing player, not a free agent. But it'd be interesting to see more of those type of trades. I think that would allow GMs to really separate themselves.
Yeah, super creative. It was a really interesting wrinkle to the whole Clowney saga, no doubt about that. Andrew Brandt is, of course, has the Business of Sports podcast, and you can catch his writing at MMQB. Just does a fantastic job covering that side of sports. Andrew, really appreciate you making time. Hey, enjoy the games. The games are here Thursday night. We can't wait.
Yeah, enjoy it. But take care, guys.
All right, thanks. Andrew Brandt joining us on the program. Good perspective on the contractual stuff. A lot of big contractual news, even though there's games coming up Thursday. A lot of contracts being handed down, not just to Deshaun Watson, but some big names getting some big deals in DeAndre Hopkins. About to be the next one, it would appear, with the Arizona Cardinals. All right, as we shift gears here during the world's biggest pregame show, 100 hours of coverage for the Texans and the Chiefs leading up to the game on Thursday night. Let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, before we get to headlines, I got to give you guys a code word so that
That's right.
It's Big Seth. Code word, the biggest headline of them all. I have got today's code word to give away an autographed, authentic Whitney Merciless Texans helmet. You'll write down this code word right now and then listen to In the Loop between 12:45 and 1 p.m. today. They will play a cue to call, and caller number 5 with the correct code word will win this autographed Whitney Merciless Texans helmet. Today's code word is
football.
Football. Today's code word is football. That's football. Remember the code word football. Set your alarm for this afternoon for 12:45, and by 1 o'clock you'll hear the cue to call. Win an autographed Whitney Merciless helmet exclusively inside the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage here on Sports Radio 610. All right, the Texans are getting ready for Kansas City. J.J. Watt met with the media yesterday. He was asked an interesting question. The younger brother TJ, I mean, J.J.'s been the oldest one of the Watt crew for a long, long time. So until the last couple years, he's never really experienced his brothers being on his level. TJ's there now. They have the same odds for the Defensive Player of the Year. Here's J.J. on TJ Watt being talked about in the same conversations with him.
I'm really excited about it. You know, I love watching him play. It's fun to watch. It's fun to have conversations with him. It's fun to talk in the offseason, work in the offseason. Obviously, Derek being on the other side of the ball, we can't necessarily have the same conversations about what it takes, you know, to rush the passer and things like that. But for me and TJ, playing the same position, fighting for the same things, trying to one-up each other at all times, there's nothing better than that. So I really – one of my favorite things after our games is to go in quick and see what his stats are during the game or to turn on their game if it's on in the afternoon and watch. So now I'll be able to turn on that game and see both of them. But for me and TJ personally, there's obviously a whole lot of competition going on, and I have no plans on letting my little brother win anytime soon.
No, quick follow-up. He's not going to let him win anytime soon, and he wasn't even going to give him some shine when he was asked, well, when will you see TJ as being your peer?
Once he has 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, I'll see him as a peer.
No room, no wiggle room at all for a sibling, Seth.
I genuinely laughed during that answer, and I felt I almost like went to hit the unmute button so, you know, I could add to the cacophony
sure.
of laughter. But then I felt like that was a little bit like too much like being a kiss ass, so I didn't do it.
Your laugh would stand out too. You have a very deep voice. Yeah.
Yeah, that would people be like, "Oh, Seth Payne's laughing.
Kiss ass." Yeah.
So, you know what? This is a good sign, I think, Sean, and this is in the territory of going way too deep into analyzing nonsensical things, but I would worry that the Texans would be too uptight this week going versus the Chiefs, who, you know, embarrassed them the last time they faced them. So far, I think the players have seemed pretty loose in press conferences. I think that means something. And then Tim Kelly said 2 genuinely funny things on Sunday in his press conference there. They weren't jokes worth replaying or anything, but he kind of just like made little one-off comments. And I thought, this here is a different Tim Kelly than the one I ever would have thought I'd be seeing 6 months ago. We used to watch those press conferences last year, and it felt like a hostage video. It felt like he was just trying to say the right thing and get out of there without getting punished for whatever he said. This year, I feel like he's much looser. So I feel good about their overall attitude.
Yeah, Tim Kelly gives answers now, like single answers that are as long as his combined answers at a press conference last year. You know, he'll give like a 45-second answer right now. I don't know that you got 45 seconds combined out of like 6 or 7 answers last year. You know, Tim Kelly's bebopping and scotting all over the place. So the Texans...
I had some other questions for JJ yesterday that I didn't ask, because mostly I saw there were a whole bunch of Kansas City people in on the Zoom call.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've got a bunch of stupid workout type stuff I want to ask him, which I guess before a huge Thursday night game isn't what I should be asking.
Save it for the bye week.
I'll say, that or next week or before a Jaguars game or something.
There you go. Yeah, something a little less important.
I basically had the equivalent of like, bro, how much do you bench? I had like 8 of those questions
awesome.
Lined up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get him on the podcast. That's easy.
It's nice to talk to a fellow defensive lineman.
Yeah,
exactly.
Of course it is. Of course it is. A fellow meathead. There you go. Seth, so the game is on Thursday. Normally a game would be on Sunday. So today is really like Friday. So what's left to do for the Texans now? Is the hay pretty much in the barn where they got to walk through today or something, then they travel tomorrow?
You do a light practice, you know, with no – I mean, almost every practice is with no pads these days with the CBA. But it's a lighter practice, and it's a lot of fine-tuning. And it is a lot of the mental stuff and situational football with most teams. I don't know exactly how Bill O'Brien runs it, but that's generally how it goes. And, yeah, this is where you dial in and make any last little tweaks to the game plan, and you want to be sharp and fresh. I know Brandon Cooks is limited, which, again, I've had to readjust to this crazy timeline of playing the opening game on a Thursday night. I saw that on Pro Football Talk this morning as a headline. I'm like, well, who the hell cares? It's Wednesday, or it's Tuesday. And then I remembered, it's a couple days before the game.
Yeah.
This matters for fantasy purposes.
It is here. So Texans, Chiefs, Thursday night, 100 hours leading up to it. You're in the middle of it right now. The world's biggest pregame show. Shifting gears, there are other sports going on this week. In Game 3 of the Rockets tonight in the Orlando bubble, the Lakers, of course, tying that series up at one game apiece on Sunday night. The Rockets, they're going to need a better game out of Russell Westbrook. That goes without saying. He was 1 of 7 from three-point range. Seth, I would say that the number that Russell Westbrook needs to impact the most heading into tonight's game, 7 turnovers, obviously, but of that three-point shooting is the 7, not so much the 1. Like, I'm not looking at it going, he needs to make more. I'm like, no, he needs to take fewer.
I'm terrified of Russ going out and making his first 2 threes. That's what scares me the most about this game.
Dude, that's so funny you say that. When he made that one in the second half the other night where he pulled up from 3, like, he pulled up and, like, leaning forward with no one near him, like, kind of leaning sideways and makes a 3, I'm like, crap. That, I mean, basically, he just guaranteed us 5 more of these. Is what it's awesome that he made it, but it's also like almost like turning the ball over 4 times when he makes one like that.
You know, I think that, look, human nature is almost undefeated in the game of basketball. It's just the ebbs and flows of what happens after a convincing win versus a good team is, that other team, the Lakers are a really good team, and they don't want to go down 0-2, and they just came out sharper and more motivated in the first half. I credit the Rockets for writing their course and getting back within reach in the second half, but I think what happens is after game one, the Rockets were so much faster, were just so much more lethal, like to the point where it just looked like the Lakers athletically were not going to be able to keep up, that I think that they just forgot how hard it was going to be. Yeah. And they just didn't make those little adjustments. You know, Covington taking a shot, Austin Rivers rotating properly, all these little things that they were just a half step off of. You can't do that versus the Lakers. I don't care what the mismatch is in style or your guards or the front court or whatever. Versus really good basketball teams in the playoffs, you can't come out lackadaisical like that in the first half. And I don't think they will tonight.
I know that they lost on Sunday, and I know that for a lot of that game, they didn't look very good. They fell way behind in the first half, and it took shooting lights out in the third quarter just to make it a one-possession game going back and forth until the Lakers put a run on them to start the fourth quarter. But, Seth, I mean, I don't know if you feel similarly. I feel best about the Rockets right now. I feel better about them right now than I have felt since Game 3 of the Oklahoma City series.
Right, yeah, because this is, okay, at the end of the day, what'd they do? They dropped the game to the Lakers.
Yeah, I was terrified from Game 3 on in the OKC series, I was terrified.
Well, and I'd say this, they dropped a game versus the Lakers in which Russell Westbrook, your second best player, played just abysmally, horrendously,
maybe his worst game
awful,
that he's played.
Turning the ball over, this is what you get. Remember, they are a football team now. Because of their lack of size, the turnover battle means everything. And they turned the ball over 17 times, and the Lakers got 27 points off of those turnovers. You just flat out can't do that. I mean, they created 17 turnovers, which is great, but you can't give up those other 17. Not with this small ball. And yes, but I agree with you. I feel like they'll rebound from this. They'll figure it out. My only concern is really how much of Russ playing the way he has in these first couple games, some of his sloppiness, how much of it is just rustiness versus how much of it is his quad. Because the rustiness, I feel, can continue to improve throughout the playoffs. I'm not so sure the quad will.
Well, how much of it is the Lakers, too? Because they amped up their defensive intensity in Game 2, but they came up with some things just scheme-wise that the Rockets had a lot of trouble with. Seth, that whole first half, the Rockets, and especially the first quarter when they fell behind by like 20 points, the Rockets were really struggling with all the trapping that the Lakers were doing. Yeah. It didn't matter who had the ball. The Lakers were throwing double teams at the ball. And it's one thing when Oklahoma City is getting after you tenaciously on the perimeter. Those are guards doing it. But you've got athletic big guys in LeBron and AD and Kyle Kuzma coming at you on the perimeter. The Rockets really, really struggled with that.
Well, that's where I think that half step matters. Because it's not like the Rockets haven't seen all kinds of defensive strategies to try to slow down and limit James Harden. And Harden was responding to it properly. Harden was doing what, you know, hey, you want to put two guys on me, then great. We'll make it 4-on-3. Like, good luck with that. But when it was 4-on-3 for the Rockets, those guys weren't quick enough. They weren't snappy enough with it. And that's where I feel confident because we've seen this before. They've seen everything thrown at them defensively, and a 3-2 zone shouldn't be some code that they can't crack. They'll figure it out.
Right. Next headline, the Astros take on the Oakland A's. They lose to the Oakland A's last night, 6-0. They've got a doubleheader today, I believe. Today is a doubleheader. This is the Astros.
So many doubleheaders.
Seth, this is their. This is not a joke. This is their fourth doubleheader in 2 weeks.
It's nuts. That's all right, Sean. That's all right, Sean. They've got a veteran bullpen that's durable as hell.
And a fully healthy roster as well. They've got a roster that's really built for this.
No, Sean, don't worry. We'll just ask Bielak to go 8 or 9 next time he's out. It'll be fine.
What, 8 or 9 batters?
Just like Fromber. How many pitches did Fromber throw? 108 or so?
He trotted him back out there with 100 pitches on the ledger.
Yeah, I mean, which, look, normally I would say, man, Dusty Baker up to his old tricks, but what's he going to do? Yeah. They're in a pickle right now. And also, what was this about?
Blake Taylor? I'm about to lay that out for us here. Yeah, no, they've lost 5 in a row. They have put Chris Davinsky and Blake Taylor on the injured list, so they get to join everybody else that's on the injured list. I think Bregman's getting activated here pretty soon. But Dusty Baker revealed something about Blake Taylor. Now, we need to remember, Blake Taylor was the player, Seth, that when they broke camp and they came back to Minute Maid to start the season, Blake Taylor was the guy who was effusive, saying, I cannot thank Dusty Baker enough. This is my dream to pitch in the big leagues. Blake Taylor was talking like a guy who felt like, I'm going to be sent back down to Corpus Christi as soon as somebody else gets healthy again. But I'm going to value every minute of this opportunity. He could not believe he was getting this opportunity. And then, as it turned out, Blake Taylor turned into a nice setup reliever for them, a really nice lefty arm. So this is a guy who is feeling the whole day-to-day thing of being a fringe big leaguer. So maybe it stands to reason that he was doing what Dusty was saying he was doing yesterday. Blake Taylor was hiding his injury from management.
You know, he had hidden it and was trying to medicate himself because, as a young player, he was afraid to go in and get treatment, you know, because I don't know why, but, you know, he was afraid to go in and get treatment in the training room because he was afraid that, I don't know where it came from, that it's not us, you know, he's afraid of being sent out.
How about that? Yeah, self-medicating.
I know. You know what, though? That looks so much worse than a headline because typically self-medication, like, people talk about it in terms of, substance abuse, right?
Right.
Like, they talk about it more there. That's not what Dusty meant. It didn't seem at all. Like, I think he was probably putting icy hot on it himself or icing it and just not telling anybody about it. I totally get that. As a younger player especially, you feel like this is your one opportunity and I'm a pitcher. I know if I tell them I've got elbow soreness, they're either going to shut me down or there's always the fear in the back of your head, too, that they're going to think you're soft or something. I've been in that same spot.
I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, you were a young player. I mean, you, Seth, I remember you saying that you were dealing with a knee your first 2 years in the league when you were talking about who was it? Jordan, when he had the patellar tendon. You were dealing with that knee your first 2 years in the league, but I would imagine as a guy who came in as a mid-round pick and was probably worried about even making the roster coming into the NFL out of an Ivy League school, the last thing you were going to do was let on that you were hurt for fear of losing your spot, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, Jordan probably had the similar feelings, except that he's also out there just smashing a 1,000 OPS.
Right.
So he's got a little bit more leeway. But, yeah, you don't want that to be the thing that upends you, but then you're stuck in this catch-22, right, where then you're playing poorly because you're not telling them about your injury. Yeah. And that's one thing that athletes learn as they get older. Any little thing, go to the training room, start treating it, like nip it in the bud, because it blossoms into something big really, really fast.
No doubt.
I knew. That was one of the first things Richard Smith, the defensive coordinator, said in one of his long lines of mistakes and missteps. I remember basically him telling everybody to stay out of the training room because bad stuff happens in the training room. Whereas, like, every veteran player I've ever heard of says, unless they're just freakish, some of these guys are just freakishly durable, but for the most part, people say, look, if you're sore, go in and get it treated before it turns into actual pain.
Yeah.
You know, go in and take care of your body.
Dude's a real gem, this Richard Smith.
I know, man. He drives me insane. I try to be so respectful to guys that I played for and everything, but there were so many things about him that were bad for football.
Second Richard Smith drive-by of the morning from Seth Payne.
It doesn't have to be a drive-by. I'll linger. I'll do a podcast episode on Richard Smith.
have you looked at the standings, the MLB standings lately, Seth, or have you just been – like, I've been – I haven't really looked at it because they've been so far behind the A's and so far ahead of everybody else that for second place. So I'm like, well, they're gonna make the postseason. They'll be like a 5 or 6 seed, and then let's go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've noticed this, but the Seattle Mariners are all of a sudden playing really, really good baseball.
Sean, there's no shame in losing out to the Mariners, Sean. I mean,
the Mariners are 2 games.
It's almost
back.
It's like an unwritten rule in baseball. Like, hey, if the Mariners overtake you, what are you going to do?
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty bad. things have gotten really uncomfortable with the Astros over the past couple of weeks.
They've gotten tight.
Well, now because the Athletics were doing similarly poorly as the Astros. I mean, both these teams headed into this series being 4-6 in their last 10.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, the A's gained a little bit of ground.
A's
four
are
and a half. They're 4.5 games up on the Astros.
Yep, 4.5 game lead on the Astros. The Astros only a 2-game lead over the Mariners for second place in the AL West.
You got 3 more games with the A's, and you know each game counts for 2.
Four more.
Oh, it's 5 in a row?
They're playing the 5-game series.
Oh, it's
doubleheader
four days in a row. Yeah. The doubleheader today.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the beauty of playing head to head versus the team that you're vying for the lead. Like every game counts for 2. Oh, come on, Sean.
Or they completely boat race you,
Sean. None of this negative Nelly.
Sorry, Seth.
Deshaun Watson's got me motivated. Sure, Deshaun was talking about pulling himself up out of a bad area environment. Right. A tough go of it as a younger man.
Yeah.
I'm simply talking about having a slightly more negative than me. Co-host.
There you go.
Similar circumstances.
It's
basically
the exact same thing.
Lifting yourself up out of poverty versus dealing with
Sean Pendergast,
abject negativity.
I'm the poverty of co-hosts, is what I am.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.